Okay.
Welcome back, everyone. Parshas Noach, October 9th, 2007. All right, so Noach begins on page 30. We're going to go way back to the beginning. I'm actually going to start by going back a little bit. Let's go to the end of Parshas Bereishis, so you can flip back to page 26. We will start there. Hi, everyone. Come on in. So what I'd like to do this afternoon, what we'll do is we'll go through the first few psukim, so a few verses in the beginning of the parasha, and we'll use that to sort of weave the story as to what's going on with this, the story of Noach and the flood. So the backdrop for this entire parasha are the last four or five psukim at the end of Parshas Bereishis. So the Torah begins, again on page 26, verse 5, pasuk in the bottom of the page, Vayar Hashem ki rabo ro'osa odom ba'oretz. Hashem saw the wickedness of man was great upon the earth, v'chol yetzer machshavos libo rach rach kol hayom. Every product of the thoughts of his heart were evil always. So the Torah describes the nature, what we all know, our first thoughts, impulses are usually, I don't want to say evil or wicked, but more, let's call it self-serving. That's our initial reaction, our first thoughts. God saw that. And it had gotten to a point, the Torah describes in verse 6, Vayinochem Hashem ki aso es ha'adam ba'ores. Hashem reconsidered, literally, or he regretted. The word Vayinochem has a couple of different meanings. Either he regretted or he considered even the fact that man had been placed on earth. Vayisate velibo, his heart had the sort of sadness. Vayomer Hashem emcha es ha'adam asher barosi mi'al p'nei ha'adam. I will blot out man from the face of the earth. Me'odam ad behema ad remes ad ufa shomayim, from everything, animal, creeping things, birds, for I reconsidered making them. And then the Torah concludes, v'noyach matzachein be'enei Hashem. Yet Noach found favor, found grace in the eyes of Hashem. So that's how the parsha last week concluded. So you have the whole story of Bereishis and Adam and Chava, Cain and Abel, and then the very last series of verses sets up this week's parsha. That man looked out and God looked out and he saw that man had sort of become corrupt. And he regretted having had made man, decided to wipe out man and the entirety of the world, not just man whom he created, but the animals and the birds and the fowl and the creeping things. Everything was going to be wiped out. Except the parsha concludes, Noach matzo chein be'inei Hashem. Noach found literally favor, grace in the eyes of Hashem. That's our backdrop. I want to mention one Gemara first, just as an introduction to everything that we're going to be talking about. The Gemara asks the question in the Sechah Sanhedrin. The Gemara asks, Adam chata, the abehemos mi chata. So man sins. Man became corrupt. What did the animals do? God creates this whole beautiful world. And it's a beautiful world. There's a lot going on in the world. So man became corrupt. So Hashem says, Emcha es ha'adam asher barasi. I want to wipe out man whom I've created from the face of the world. And then he says, Me adam ad behema, animals, remes, the creeping things, and the of hashamayim, and the birds. So the Gemara asks the question, what did they do wrong? Why should they be wiped out just because man has become corrupt? So the Gemara answers with a beautiful idea. The Gemara says it's a mashal, this is a parable compared to a man who makes a chuppah for his son. His son is getting married, and the father prepares the chasana, he prepares the wedding, he has the canopy, he has the feast, all the food, the clothing, everything is all set. And the Gemara says, Liyomim, a few days before the chasana, meispano, his son dies. So the man goes ahead and he takes his chuppah and he takes all the food, upizer, and he literally disperses it all, he spreads it out, he gives it all away, he just ruins, so to speak, everything and just doesn't want anything to do with it. The Gemara says, why would he do that? He says, Kol ze lo yasisi yelo b'shvil b'ni. I only made this for my son. I wasn't interested in having a good meal on a Sunday night. I wasn't interested in having nice music. I made this only for my son, and now that my son isn't here, I really have no need for any of this. Kach, so too, says the Gemara, Hashem only created this world for man. Everything in this world, all the beauty, all the ecological systems, all the animals, all the planets, and the mountains and volcanoes, it's all here for us, in one way or another, to enjoy, for us to make use of, in some way to serve our Creator better, enjoy the goodness that He gave us. And so the Gemara says, when Hashem looked down upon man and saw that man had become corrupt, and that man was no longer entitled to remain, so for what need does he have the chuppah? What need does he have this world other than for man to enjoy it? Anyway, it's beautiful, beautiful Gemara. That's our backdrop where we are right now. So we're at the point, man has become corrupt. Hashem is interested in destroying not just man, but therefore the whole chuppah, the whole world, which came together for the purpose of man. Except the Torah completed last week's parsha of the Noach, Matzachin, Beinei Hashem, Manoach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Okay, that brings us to this week's parsha. That brings us to Parshas Noach.
And that doesn't answer the question. If he saves man, the Noach, why did he destroy the animals? He did destroy the animals.
Right, he
saved the ark. Excuse me. Sorry, everybody. He saved the animals. I've got the ark.
Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, so our parsha begins as follows. So what I'd like to do is we're basically going to study about the first four or five verses in the parsha. But we'll use these to sort of tell the story as best we can about what's going on. It's a little bit warm. I tried setting the air conditioner. Apparently I didn't do a good job. So if anyone would like to go outside, let me give it a shot. Yeah. So the Torah begins of page 30, 31. Eva told us, Noach, these are the offspring, the generations, the progeny of Noach. Noach ish tzadik, tomim haya b'dayrasav. Noach was a righteous man, perfect in his generations, meaning he was perfect in all the generations that he lived in and the ones that preceded him. Esa Elohim hishalech Noach. Noach walked with God. So an interesting first verse. So if you'll notice, there, I guess you would say almost like three ideas in this first verse. You could just read it straight through in English. These are the offspring of Noah. We begin with an introductory phrase we're going to introduce. Who is this Noach? Because if you remember again, the very last pasuk in Parshas Bereishis said, even though God wished to destroy mankind, Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Who is this Noach? So says the Torah, even though Noach technically had even been introduced even before that, Noach, we say, these are the generations of Noach. Noach was a tzaddik, a righteous person, perfect in his generations, who walked with Hashem. Now the very next pasuk says, in verse 10, Vayola Noach shlosha banim, Hashem es Cham yes Yafes. He had three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. So you'll notice in the Art Scroll translation there are two dashes. And those dashes are because there's a difficulty in the way the Torah structures itself. If your opening words are, these are the offspring of Noah, what should the next words be?
Their name.
We should have skipped to the beginning of verse 10. These are the offspring of Noah. Noah had three sons. Those are his offspring, Shem, Ham, and Yafes. And instead, there's this parenthetical statement. These are the offspring of Noah. Oh, by the way, Noah was a righteous individual, perfect in his generations. He walked with Hashem. What's that doing there? Well, you just interrupted my thought process. It should have been either tell me who his children are, or tell me who he is, and then tell me who his children are. But it's a little bit odd, and Art Scroll is obviously helping us out with that by putting these dashes in, because it doesn't read as a sentence. These are the offspring of Noach. Noach was a righteous man. So Art Scroll wasn't the first person to figure this out. In fact, Rashi already comments on this, and Rashi wasn't the first person to figure this out. The Gemara, the sages of the Talmud already picked up on this. And I want to share with you two beautiful ideas that Rashi says, as explained by the Maharal, as to what is the meaning, what does the Torah want to teach us with this oddity of structure, breaking up the phrase, these are his generations, these are his children, by first telling us a little bit about him, that he was a righteous individual. So Rashi says as follows, I'll read it inside if you'd like to follow. It's the very first Rashi in the Parsha. Says Rashi, Eila told us, Noach, Noach ish tzadik, holo vihizkiro, siper vishivcho. Since we mentioned him, once we mention Noach, so we talk about his praise, we say good things about him. So Rashi quotes a pasuk, Shenemar Zecher Tzadik Levracha, a phrase that we're familiar with. Whenever we refer to somebody who has passed away, we'll say, so and so said, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. Zatzal is the first letters of that Zayin, Tzadi Lamed, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. that his may the recollection of the righteous be for us a bracha, it should be a blessing. So Rashi says that verse in Proverbs, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, that when you remember or recall a righteous individual, it should be a blessing. So Rashi says, the Torah is fulfilling that right now. It said, these are the generations of Noach. Oh, look at that. I just mentioned Noach. Let me tell you a little bit about some of the righteous things that he's done. So I'll define, Noach was a righteous individual who was perfect in his ways, who walked with Hashem. That's Rashi's first explanation of why the parenthetical statement comes in here. So the Maral asks a question. He says, but we do this all the time in the Torah. Every time we mention Avraham's name, we don't have a dash and we say all of a sudden, oh, by the way, Avraham was a really great guy. He did a lot of chesed. And every time we mention Yitzchak's name in the Torah, we don't all of a sudden put a dash and say, oh, by the way, Yitzchak, do you know what he did? He was a real Bal Yira. He was a person of strength and of fear. We don't do that by all of a sudden here in Noach, we have to... So the Maral says that the only time this rule applies is when you're contrasting the righteous with the wicked. Here we were saying, what were the verses right before this? Right before this were the verses that man had become so corrupt that God had deemed it necessary to wipe them all out. We're about to mention how the world had become corrupt again, leading up to the flood, which we'll read in a few minutes. In that context, when you recall the righteous, who has, so to speak, been, quote-unquote, forgotten amongst the wicked, that's why whenever we mention that, in that context, the righteous, we sort of distinguish him from the wicked by recalling his praise, and that's why here, specifically by Noach, the parsha opens up and says, Noach was a righteous individual, perfect in his ways, who walked with Hashem. This is the reason why the Maral says, also, only when we mention somebody who's passed away do we say, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. When I quote a sage who is alive, I don't say Zecher, because he hasn't been forgotten. He's not, so to speak, pushed aside. He's still here. When he's already passed away and, so to speak, forgotten from this world, that's whenever we mention his name, we then follow that up by saying, may his memory be a blessing, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, or Zatzal. That's what they're going to. Anyway, that's idea number one that Rashi mentions. Now, the second idea is one that I really want to harp on for a minute too, because of its magnificence and beauty. Rashi has a second explanation why the Torah has this parenthetical statement over here. Says Rashi, Dover Acher, that in the second line in Rashi, you know what's being taught to us? Think about what's being said. If you read it, let's say you took the dashes out. How would this verse read without the dashes? These are the offspring of Noah. Noah was a righteous person. What does that sound like to you? That's one of his offspring. If you just read it, Art Scroll put the dashes in, because that's the way, it's the most logical way of reading it, is as a parenthetical statement. These are the offspring of Noah. Wait a minute, before I tell you who his children are, I need to mention his praise. He was a righteous individual, perfect, he walked with Hashem. But let's say you don't have an Art Scroll translation in front of you. Let's say you're just reading the Chumash straight, and there's no dash. You would then read it as the following thing. Noah had six children. These are the offspring of Noah. He was a righteous person. He was perfect. He walked with Hashem. And he had three sons. Shem, Ham, and Yafes. That's how it would read without the dashes. So Rashi's first explanation says, no, the dashes are supposed to be there. Let me explain why they're there. I want to mention his praise. Rashi gives a second explanation. You know what this is teaching us? Because we read the Torah on many different levels. Sometimes we read it as if there are dashes, we read it without the dashes. This is teaching us on another level. Says Rashi, Iker toldosehem shel tzadikim, the primary, principal offspring of the righteous are not their children. The principal offspring are ma'asim tovim. The deeds, the actions of man and women, those are the principal offspring that a person has. So when a person says, who are your children? So my principal children are not the people who I have given birth to. My children are the ma'asim, the actions, the activities that I've been engaged in, the ma'asim tovim that I've had. Those are my primary and principal offspring and generations. And says Rashi, that is what is being taught by the fact that the Torah, before it got to his three sons, told us how righteous he was, how perfect he was, and how he walked with Hashem. Now, why should that be? And it's an odd usage of the word told us. It's an odd usage of the concept of offspring to say that my actions are actually the principal offspring that I have as a person. Explains the Maharal two ideas. It says, number one, When a person has a child, who or how much goes into that? So the Gemara says, there are three partners in creating a child. You need a mother, you need a father, and more than both of those, you need Hashem. Those are the three partners in creating a child. So says the Maharal, you're going to take credit. When a person leaves this world, and he says, what did I leave? What were my offspring? What was my progeny that I've left this world? So you're going to say, my children? They're going to say up in heaven, they're going to say, you think your children are your primary offspring? Do you know what went into giving you children? You needed two parents, and more than both of those, you needed God. You're going to take credit for that. There's a major partner here that you're forgetting about. So first of all, says the Maharal, the reason why the principal toldos, the principal offspring that we take with us are our actions, says the Maharal, is because those are ours that we take with us. That's me, myself, creating. And it's not contingent upon two other people, a spouse, plus more importantly, the Creator. So says the Maharal, that's why the sages are alluding to in this verse the idea that the principal offspring that a person has are in fact his ma'asim tovim. And then the Maharal says another idea. Says the Maharal, when a person has a child, so it's not begufo, he's not creating himself, he's creating something else, another individual, another person. The actions that a person does, says the Maharal, ki'ilu molid asmo, he's creating himself. We are all born into this world with a ball of potential, just a burst of energy that's waiting to be brought to fruition. To be, take all of our unlocked potential, all of the energy, all of the capabilities, all of the talents that we've been endowed with, and to bring them out, to make something of it, to actually to do and to produce. This is a world of actions. If God wanted just to create us with potential and then just, we would have been born, and what would be the purpose of this? But the purpose is, He gave us all sorts of potential. He gave us all sorts of talents. He gave some of us money, He gave some of us less money, He gave us skills, He gave us good voices, He gave us writing skills, whatever. And said, here's the world that I created for you to make use of. Put your stamp into the world. Do something for me. Be an Eved Hashem, a servant of Hashem, using all that I gave you, and make use of your life. Says the Maharal, you are creating yourself with your Ma'asim Tovim. You're recreating, literally, your physical being was born however many years ago that it says on your birth certificate. But the real you, when we say, who are you? Not your physical body when you were born. Who's the real you? The neshama that we have, the person that we become and we create, we're creating that ourselves. No one's giving birth to that other than each individual who gives birth to themselves. Says the Maharal, the reason so why the righteous consider their actions to be more of an offspring than their own children is because they understand what they're doing by giving birth to children is simply putting the next generation in a position to make something of themselves. But what they make of themselves, they're giving birth to themselves literally. So that there's a physical birthing process, which our mothers did to all of us many years ago. And then there's a spiritual birthing in which we literally give birth to ourselves and create ourselves by fulfilling the potential through the actions that we do. And that, says the Maharal, is what Rashi means when he quotes the sages in saying, when you read the verse without the dashes, what it yields is, these are the offspring of Noach. Noach was a righteous person. That is his greatest offspring that he produced, because he created himself into that righteous individual. Yeah.
And not only that, but in contrast to his environment, that's why I think it says the Dorato.
Yeah, we'll get to that. 100%. And he created that amongst the wicked environment that he was in. But that is just a magnificent idea that the principal offspring of a person are his actions, because of the idea of creating ourselves, bringing our potential to fruition and seeing it fulfilled. And that is alluded to in the way that the Torah structures this by first stating that Noah was a righteous and perfect individual before actually listing the children that he had. Beautiful. Ah. The Torah is geschmack. That is just geschmack. It's just geschmack. You can eat it. You can taste it. Okay. Moving forward to dessert. That was just the main course. So the Torah then describes, as Paul was just mentioning, the phrase then says he was a righteous individual, perfect in his generations. An extraneous phrase, totally unnecessary. It should have just said, if you want to define the person, say, Noah was a righteous person, he was perfect. What do you mean he was perfect in his generations? What? He was perfect. If he was perfect, he was perfect. If he wasn't, he wasn't. But you're qualifying his perfection by saying he was perfect in his generations. The implication being, he was in a corrupt environment. As the Torah has already described, it was corrupt so much so to the point where God was ready just to say, let's wipe this out and start over. And in that environment, Noah could be defined as perfect. Now Rashi quotes a fascinating dispute, which is found in the Gemara. Three lines into the Rashi, I'll read it in the initial Hebrew, and you could follow along or just listen to the translation. Bedorosov says Rashi, two ways to view this. Yesh mirabosenu darshim oso lishvach. There are those of our rabbis who expounded upon this in Noach's praise. Kol shekein sheilu hoya bedor tzadikim hoya tzadik yoser. That the Torah is telling us, not only was Noach righteous in the generation in which he found himself, but how much more so would he have been righteous had he lived in a generation of righteous people, such as the generation of Avram. He lived with a person such as Avram. How much more so would he have been righteous? And the Torah is telling us a praise of Noach, that look at how righteous he was, even in a wicked generation, but he was of such character, had he been in a generation of righteous individuals, he would have been even more righteous. Then there were those who expounded upon this in a derogatory light. He was only righteous compared to the people whom he was surrounded by. But had he been in a generation with Avraham, and he'd been compared to a righteous person such as that, he would have been a nothing. Mm-mm. Wouldn't have registered. Wouldn't have been on the radar screen had he been in such a generation.
That's what Rashi says.
So Rashi says, two sides, how to expound upon this. The Torah is saying he was righteous in his generations. Do we look at that as a praise of Noah to say, look at what he accomplished. He was surrounded by wicked people. He accomplished this. Certainly had he been in the generation of even more righteous individuals, he would have been even better. Or do we expound upon this in a derogatory way to say he was only righteous compared to the people who he was with? Had he been in a generation of righteous, he would have been a little nothing, would have been a nobody. Now, the morale again explains here, and this needs to be clear, we're not going to expound upon Noah in a derogatory way. We just got finished saying how righteous he was and he was perfect. How do you contrast that by saying in a derogatory way? So Rao explains what this means is as follows. Everybody agrees to the facts. The facts on the ground were as follows. And the righteous scale of 0 to 100, let's say Noah rated at a 75, just throwing out a number. Everybody agrees to that. And everybody agrees that compared to the wicked of this generation, he was great. And everybody agrees compared to an Avraham, he was much less than that. And everybody agrees had he been in Avraham's generation, he would have been better. That everybody agrees to. The dispute is, for which reason did Hashem decide to spare Noah and nobody else? What was the reason that Hashem looked down upon Noah and said, you are going to be spared? Is it because, Lishvach, as a praise of Noah, in which we said to him, look at what you made of yourself in such a negative environment. Of course you would have been greater had you been with Abraham. And of course, if you were now the way you are with Avram, you would have been a nothing. Everybody agrees to those two facts. What you've accomplished compared to Avram, you would have been a nothing. And everybody agrees you would have been better. Which merits, how did Hashem's judgment work? Upon which merit did we look at Noach and say, you're going to be spared? Was it the merit of saying, wow, as a praise? Wow. Look at what you did, surrounded by wicked people. Had you been... You're the kind of person, had you been surrounded by better people, you would have been better. In that merit alone, that tells me you should be spared, because you accomplished the most that you possibly could have. Had you been greater around greatness, you would have been greater. You deserve to be spared. Or is it derogatory that the Torah is pointing out, the only reason why you were spared is because you were the best there was? Had you been in Avram's generation, you would have been a nothing. But you're the best there was, so you were spared. So do we look at it, is the Torah telling us, the sages argued, when the Torah stresses that Noah was righteous in his generation, is it stressing it in Noah's praise, that he earned the right to be praised because look at what he accomplished in a negative environment, and that earned him the right to be spared? Or is the Torah saying he was spared because he was the best that we had compared to the wicked individuals that he was surrounded by? He made himself to be the most righteous out there. Either way, what I want to bring out, and what we'll get back to in a few minutes, is the idea that Noah clearly didn't achieve the level of Avram. That everybody agrees to. He was on a level lower, a lesser level of greatness than Avram had. That was agreed upon by all. We could argue about what was his merit in being saved, but what's clear in the sages, as they read through this, there's something less here in Noah than Avram. We're going to get back to this in a few minutes. I just want to set it up here already in this dispute as to how to read the verse. That's clear. That everybody agrees to. There's something less here. And I want to show it to you again in the back half. The last phrase in this pasuk says, Es Elokim Mishalech Noach. Noach walked with Hashem. Sounds like a good thing, right? To walk with Hashem. So Rashi points out something very, very interesting. When the Torah describes Avraham, the Torah uses a different phrase. All the way, much later in the story of Bereishis, when Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, goes out to find a wife for Avraham's son Yitzchak. So he recounts the whole story to Lavan and to his family, and he describes a conversation, Eliezer describes a conversation that he had had with Avraham, in which Avraham states, "The God before whom I walk will help me out." So that Avram describes his relationship with Hashem as if Avraham walks before Hashem, and Noach here is described as walking with Hashem. And Rashi points out that this is actually stating something, again pointing out that Noach fell a little bit short of the level of Avraham, because Avraham walked before Hashem, and Noach walked with Hashem. What is the meaning or significance of whether or not you're walking with Hashem or walking before Hashem?
Before means in front of?
Or? Yeah. So Rashi points out to walk with means that you need assistance. You need some type of help. Like I help you as I walk with you. If I'm walking with you, I could hold you by the arm and we can walk together. To walk before Hashem is as you watch a child ride a bike or learn to walk. I'm standing behind you, letting you go. If you fall, maybe I'll be there to catch you, but you're on your own, as opposed to when I'm walking beside you, I'm literally holding you by the hand and walking forward. And the Maral again describes this as being indicated by the fact that Hashem tests Avraham. We don't find those tests by Noach. To test somebody is to say, oh, you're on the bike? And I give you a little push, and I'm behind you, let's see how you do on your own. So that shows a level of greatness in which I'm willing to do that. I push you out in front. Avram describes himself as walking before Hashem, to be on such a level to be tested like that, as opposed to Noah, who was walking with Hashem, which is indicative of needing a little bit of help from the side. As the Maral describes, when you're in the presence of the Shekhinah, when you're with the person, you always act differently. That's right. I'm right there. Usually, you know, whenever you're, if you're with, when you're in a meeting with the rabbi, in his presence, in the room, so you're not going to say or do the same things because you're right there with him. When you're not in his presence, so then it's a different story. And that's the idea that we have to have. The very first statement in the Shulchan Aruch, in our body of law, says, based on the verse, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, I should have Hashem before me always. It's Ein Adome. You can't compare the way a person acts when he sees God always in his presence as when you don't. You act differently. You're aware of your fact in the presence of Hashem. I had one of my rebbes, one of my teachers in yeshiva in Baltimore, once told me that he sat in the back row, as most of the rebbes did in the whole base medrash, the back table, a lot of them sat. They were all near all the books, which are also in the back. And Reb Tzvi Berkowitz was like maybe a generation older, and gave the highest shiur, also sat in the back row. So my rebbe, was Rav Chaim Kazman, told me that he once found himself sitting in the Beis Medrash, you know, a little slouched over like this, as he was sitting and learning, and then when he looked over, Tzvi Berkowitz just walked in and took a seat two tables over. And he noticed, as soon as he did that, he sat up straight in his seat. And he noticed it afterwards. It was just sort of a natural reaction. You don't slouch in front of Tzvi Berkowitz. You just don't do it. When he's in the room, you sit up straight. And it's just sort of, he carried such a presence. For anyone who's been in Baltimore, and he's just such a power, you just sit up. You're just what you do. So the Maral explains, when the verse describes Noach as walking with Hashem, it's as if he was with the Shekhinah. He needed that help of the actual presence to keep himself in line. Now we're talking about greatness here. We're talking about someone who we've described as walking with the Shekhinah. I don't want it to come out as derogatory. What we're talking about here is these two great people of Avraham and Noach, but what Noach was described as being Dovuk B'Shekhinah, literally cleaving to the divine presence in itself. And therefore, he was on the straight and narrow because he had achieved such a level. But Avram was already in front of the Shekhinah, where he was being tested. He was able to support himself without that and was subject to all of those tests. Okay, again, setting up this idea that there was something missing in Noah, something a little bit lower in a level than Avram himself has described here, what we've seen so far. Okay, let's move forward as to what was the cause of this destruction. So the Torah describes what was going on in verses 11 and 12, Yud Aleph and Yud Beis. So let's read through those. The world became corrupt. Hashchasa is a language of destruction. The world became corrupt before Hashem. Vatimalei ha'aretz chamas. And the world became filled with robbery. So there are two ideas here described. There's corruption, and then there's chamas, there's robbery, both of which are described in the Torah. Again, in Yud Aleph, Vatishacheis ha'aretz, it became corrupt and filled with robbery. And then again we find in verse 12 in Yud Beis, the Torah repeats those two ideas. Vayar Elohim es ha'aretz v'hinei nishchasa. Hashem looked out and saw that the world had become corrupt. Ki hishchis kol basar es darko al ha'aretz. Because all of the flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. And then in verse Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayomer Elokim l'Noach, so Hashem says to Noach, Keitz kol basar bolif fanai, ki malo ha'aretz chamos mipneihem. When Hashem then describes at the end of the world, I'm about to destroy everything, which one does he use to describe what has come before him? Robbery. So out of the two things, corruption and robbery, it's robbery which does it. Well, first of all, what is this concept of corruption? What does that mean that the world has become corrupt? So Rashi describes that as a function of two things. Rashi says, it's in verse Yud Aleph in the bottom of the first column, Rashi says two things. Lashon erva va'avodah zara. It's a language of sexual impropriety, erva, inappropriate behavior, and avodah zarah, idol worship. Those two things are the concept of hashchasa. So that when you say two concepts have taken place in the world, there was hashchasa, which was erva, and avodah zarah. So you have idol worship and illicit relations, and you have then chamas, which is robbery. So those would be the, I guess, you know, if you want to define them, hashchasa is really two things, but three total things which seem to be described as having taken place, which resulted in the destruction of the world. The fact that it had become corrupt in terms of illicit relationships, it had become corrupt in terms of idol worship, and then it had become corrupt as far as robbery and thievery. And there's, when you read then verse Yud Gimel again, where Hashem then describes to Noach which one it was which has caused the final destruction to take place. Hashem says, V'yom Elokim l'Noach, Keitz kol basar bo lefanai, why? Ki malo ha'aretz chamas. For the earth is filled with robbery. That is the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, that Hashem describes. And Rashi, based on the Gemara, says so, based on the fact that that's the only one that Hashem chooses to describe to Noach. So the Gemara says, Lo nigzar gzardinam ela al hagezel. The final seal of judgment was only established because of the gzela. the fact that there was corruption in illicit relationships, the fact that there was corruption in idol worship, none of that would have caused this level of mass destruction. What caused the level of mass destruction was only because of robbery. Why do you suppose that is? Why is that so much worse than these cardinal sins of illicit relationships, idol worship, and it's robbery which seems to be that which carries the day?
Yeah. Well, Hashem is sort of saying it's not his pride he's destroying the world for. It's the action, interpersonal relationship is more important to him. And he'll sacrifice even, you know, his honor.
Like the whole plan is one of separations, but God is... Maybe from God's point of view, there's a place for everything, and everything in its place. When you have robbery, everything is like tohu vavohu. It's all changing place.
Kind of a total mess. Interesting, yeah.
That's what we had in our neighborhood a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, God created man in his image, and he wanted the people to behave somewhat like him. And with the robbery, it showed they didn't regard the other people as being connected to God. And so the whole...
Good. Excellent.
It's just robbery should be more important than idolatry. And I mean, that's putting robbery first. Primary sin. Doesn't seem...
Meaning what?
Meaning that idolatry and immorality is worse than...
Right. So what it seems is that if you measure the level of sin, idolatry and illicit relationships are worse. The seal of judgment that says, but we cannot tolerate this any longer, came from the robbery. And that seems to, I agree with all that has been said, as does the Maharal. The callousness shown between man and fellow man is that which is intolerable in God. You cannot have a people, both for the reasons of everything is, the world order is messed up. You have the idea of the Tzelem Elokim. This was the image that man was supposed to be created in. And when man and man are corrupted against each other, that idea, in God's eyes, was the seal of judgment that says this can't go on any longer. And a very interesting proof to this is in a couple, next week, we're going to read about the Tower of Babel, where they built a tower up to the heavens to wage a war against God. And their punishment was simply being dispersed, no destruction. And the difference is, they got along with each other. They were acting together against God. And when you act together in unity against God, all right, so you're going to be punished. But at least there was achdus, at least there was unity amongst you. When the people of Noah are against each other, and there's gezel, and there's corruption in that sense between man and man, so then that Tzelem Elokim in which man had been created is totally destroyed, and that is the seal of destruction for the generation. Now, the Gemara says as follows: Af Noach nechtar gzar din. And Noach also was this gzeira, was this decree decreed upon. Noach was also included in this to be destroyed with the flood. Ela shematzachein beinei Hashem, except for the fact of the last verse which we read from Parshas Bereishis, that Noach matzachein beinei Hashem, that Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Now that word chayin, as I mentioned, has two meanings. Sometimes it means found favor. It also comes from the word chanun, like from the 13 attributes of Hashem. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanun. That he is grace. He gives a chanina, which means like almost a free pass. So he's willing to do something which is undeserved. So the Sefarno, one of the commentators, which is printed up in your standard Chumash, writes as follows: why did the Torah say that Noach matza chayin, that he found grace? It sounds like he didn't deserve it, but it only was out of the chayin of Hashem, the midah of graciousness that Noach was spared. As the Gemara said, the Gemara says the Gzar Din really was upon Noach as well. Yet somehow he was found, Hashem had favor upon him. He gave his midah, his trait of graciousness, to spare him. So the Sforno says, Lo mipnei shehoya roi lekach, not because he was deserving of it. Kilo limdo es doiram da'as es Hashem. Where was his shortcoming? He did not teach his generation to know Hashem the way Abraham did, and Moshe did, and Shmuel did, and all the other great leaders of the Jewish people. Where Noah fell short was, says the Sforno, in teaching his generation to know Hashem. So to deserve to be saved, he didn't deserve it. But he found favor in Hashem because of his righteousness, because of the level that he had achieved, even though he should have been included in the Gzar Din and the Gzera just to wipe out the whole planet. Because of what he did achieve, Hashem used his trait of graciousness and saved Noach. Now, the last point that I just want to share with you is a thought from a Rosh Yeshiva in Israel, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht. He says as follows, why did Noach teach his generation to know Hashem? Where did this come from? So we clearly have over and over this idea. Noach was short of Avraham. Fell short of Avraham. We found it in the idea that we said that he was only righteous in his generation, but not in another generation, he wouldn't have been so righteous. We find it in the idea that he walked with Hashem as opposed to Avraham, who walked before Hashem. We find it here where the Torah describes Noach matzachein be'inei Hashem. He found graciousness before Hashem, undeserved graciousness. Where was the problem that he didn't teach? Why didn't he go out and teach his generation? Why did he sit by himself? The whole point of building the Teva that Rashi quotes later is that the people should see that he's busy for so many years building this Teva. They should come and do tshuva. How come Noach wasn't going out there and teaching the generation? So the Rosh Yeshiva explained, because we are all products of our environment. That's the reality. We are all products of the environment in which we live, and we have to be aware of that, and that's what we have to fight. Noach's generation was a generation of gezel, a generation of thievery and robbery. What does that mean to live in a generation of robbery? It means selfishness. It means a generation in which you are not concerned about the needs, wants of others, only about what you need and what you can get from everybody else. Noach was a righteous individual. The Torah says he's a tzaddik ish tamim. So whatever I'm about to say, I just want to stress over and over again, we're talking about the loftiest of levels and the shortest of shortcomings. But Chazal said, not me, Lo limdu es doro ladas es Hashem. They didn't teach his generation. Why not? Because that, a little sliver of that midah of gezel, the midah, the trait of thievery, of selfishness, of being involved in oneself and one's own needs and what I can get, the way that it manifested itself in Noach would never, chas v'sholom, manifest itself that he would steal. But if that's the environment he lived in, you know how it manifested itself? It manifested itself because he didn't put in all of his energy to go out and teach people the way of Hashem. He didn't go out to teach them how to be better people. He didn't go out to teach them because that trait of saying, you know, whatever, I don't want to call it selfishness, because I can't say that about Noah, who the Torah describes as righteous. But on his level, where he, again, we're describing somebody who walked with Hashem and not before Hashem. So I just want to stress over and over again, I'm not saying like one of us, like he was lazy, or he didn't care about his fellow Jews, he wasn't even Jews, his fellow human beings that were on the planet. I'm describing a person who was on that level of the difference between walking with Hashem and walking before Hashem. But how did that difference come from? How did it manifest itself? It came from that trait of the generation in which he lived, which was a selfish, callous generation who were concerned with themselves and taking of others for their own personal benefit. And the way in which it manifested itself with Noach was in his lack of ability to go out and put forth the energy and inspiration out there to inspire a generation to better their ways. And that's how it manifested itself. But that's why he was included in this Gzar Din, if not for the fact that he found the graciousness of Hashem because of what he did accomplish, because of how righteous he was in such an environment. Because of all that is why he was chosen to be spared. But the reason why we find, or how we find him so different from his generation, was in that trait. Yeah.
I'm not clear what he did to make him have the title or the description of being righteous. I mean, what did he do? Did he get him sick?
Okay, yeah. So, no, that's a fine question. The Ramban says, Nachmanides describes on that verse in terms of walking in, the people of Noach already had the seven mitzvahs of the Bnei Noach. They had the commandments. And he was a prophet. So he had what it meant to walk in the ways of Hashem. All of the mitzvahs which are logical in nature, he fulfilled all of them. In terms of Ben Adam L'Chaver, between man and fellow man, in terms of his, the Ramban writes that he was a prophet and he therefore knew the Derech Hashem. He knew the path in life that Hashem wanted him to take. He didn't go after idols. He didn't seek after all the other ways of determining the future, what Tumim and perfect in terms of following the ways of Hashem. So the Ramban does describe what that would look like. As far as that goes. So whereas his generation fell and actually was corrupt in interpersonal relationships and thievery, Noach a little bit absorbed that trait and it manifested itself in his inability to go out and put forth the energy to inspire his generation, because that, you know, that was the same thing. It was the same trait of being able to go out there and give to those around him for their sake. And that's where he fell short. And you know, my Rashiva spends a whole lot of time just mentioning what was his takana, what was his way of fixing and amending this? How did he rectify that? He spent a year in the Teva, in which his sole responsibility was taking care of everything around him. It was a little base medrash of, well, we're going to fix the problem here. We're going to take care of that trait. You're going to do nothing for an entire year other than be involved in chesed, being involved in giving of yourself for everything else around you, from the smallest animal to the largest of the elephants. You give and you give and you give and you give, and with that, we are going to correct that issue in terms of being able to complete. That was the journey, so to speak, of Noach and the Teva. Well, there's more to talk about that, but that's the completion of this idea that we were talking about. But those are some of the thoughts at the beginning of Parshas Noach. From the, again, starting with the idea of the principal progeny, the offspring of a person being their deeds and their accomplishments, as we create ourselves, so to speak, and that which we are solely responsible for on our own, to the idea of correcting that trait of thievery that existed in the world during Noah's time, with a little bit of selfishness that manifested itself in not giving of oneself to inspire somebody else, and the correction of that in the Teva of the Chesed to do that, to make sure that we address it ourselves in terms of what we can do and what we can accomplish. Alright, a wonderful afternoon.